Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts Live, broadcasting to you from the 10th floor of the We Believe America Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking majestic Buckhead. Whereas I look out the spacious window, I can see that it's a lovely day. It's a little bit on the cloudy side, but it's not bad. Now, as I'm looking out, I can actually see the small area where Ray Lewis, the winner of the Super Bowl yesterday, was involved in a double murder in Atlanta 12 years ago, for which he skated. Had no problem at all. Just absolutely went flying right by him. And so that is not exactly what you like to have when you are talking about justice in a society. Some things, let me just give you an example. We have a guest that's coming on today, but in the interim, I think I'm just going to give you this little story. You've heard that expression, in like Flynn. Well, he's in like Flynn. In other words, I don't have that. That comes from the 1930s when Errol Flynn was accused of rape, for which he was guilty, but got off scot-free because he was a celebrity and a Hollywood movie star. In, I think, much the same way that Ben Roethlisberger did when he was down there in Macon, Georgia, which is just 90 miles to the south, and not so much the kind of things that you would want or hope for. All right, now, the Senate has been holding hearings on the nomination of former Senator Hagel to be the Secretary of Defense. When they had the hearing for the Secretary of State, John Kerry, the week before, shortly after the testimony of Hillary Clinton on Benghazi, which was really, you know, just never got to the bottom of anything. At any rate, John Kerry passed pretty easily. He may not be the most conservative person in the world, which obviously he isn't, but we don't have a conservative president. He needs to have his own team. That being the case, that's not really that bad a choice. When it comes to Hagel, it's a little bit different. All right, I'm going to bring a couple of people on. This is a friend of mine, Rich, and that is the only name we're going to take for him right now because he wants to be anonymous. But I have known this young fellow nearly my entire life, and he and I raised quite a bit of havoc when we were a good deal younger. And we could tell some stories about that, but we're not going to.
That's right. I wouldn't even use my first name if we were going to tell those stories, Jack.
There you go. All right. Rich, I'm going to bring my brother Dick on also. He's on the line, and I'm going to see if I can't get us all on here. Dick, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Okay,
wow.
Good.
Hey, Rich.
You remember Rich we're all from Newton, Massachusetts, and, you know, which is kind of one of the great liberal havens. But at the same time, this is a place where there are some extraordinarily bright people. And we went to a public high school that was better. Frankly, when I went to the University of Georgia, it wasn't as hard as Newton High School. That's just kind of a little bit by way of background. And I was vice president of the student body, which had 3,500 kids. And Rich was the president. I didn't want to be the president because you had to work. There were things you had to do. When I ran for the little office and we talked about it, I said, you know, this is a meaningless job, and if you want somebody meaningless to do it, I'm your man. And they voted for me. I was born to be a Democrat when it came to that. All right, Rich, now that we're talking about this, I want to get right to business. I have this concern. It's a deep concern. When I look at what's happening in the Middle East, I see that we are arming the Egyptians who are about to completely repudiate the peace that has existed from the time of Jimmy Carter, the one good thing that man did as president, and doggone if he didn't do a good job on that one. We have that. We have the conflict in Syria. We have what's going on with Hezbollah, and the Iranians are about to get nukes, and our audience, that are most of the people that listen to my program are conservative Christian people.
Hallelujah.
But what they have is a profound love for Israel, and the security of Israel is what we would call a political cleavage. There are things that you can disagree about, but people that repudiate Israel, that would be something they would say, okay, I'm not going to vote for somebody who would do that. And that's how I feel. That's how I have felt my entire life. And I'm concerned that we have – personally, I do not believe that we have a lukewarm president on Israel. I think we have someone who feigns lukewarmness, but is actually an enemy of Israel. That's what
he's antagonistic. He's antagonistic. No question.
That's exactly what I think.
He's an enemy. People make excuses for our president because they say it's politics, but when he wasn't in politics and he sat in a church with an anti-Semitic, anti-American preacher screaming insults and anti-Semitic remarks, anti-American remarks, he could have got up and left, but he chose not to. So, I mean, it's very defining. But the so-called liberals, you say that there's a lot of intelligent people in Newton, and it's a liberal bastion. I mean, it's sort of a non sequitur. It's a troubling mix. When you have so-called intelligent people with a liberal bent who will accept this kind of delusional, the delusions of what they see in front of them, which is clearly, you've got an antagonistic president who is not a friend of Israel. He's not a friend of this country, in my view. He's a stranger. He's a stranger of strange land. He's an opportunist who came into power on the wings of who knows what, but it was a weak Republican positioning. But as far as Israel is concerned, from my vantage, I'm right with you, Jack.
Let me just interrupt one second and just tell our audience that Rich is Jewish, and he and I have been friends for half a century. And
that's right.
I'm going to turn it back over, but I want everybody to know that our theology has some differences, obviously, but when it comes to this subject, we're in lockstep.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I find the subject of Israel to be very defining, whether you're Christian or Jewish. And, my love of the evangelical movement is basically because how they've embraced Israel. And I was years ago. I don't, you're not aware of this, Jack, but I wanted to have a pro-Israel rally in my temple because it was during the Intifada, and Bush was not responding to Israel's needs. Jews were being slaughtered in the streets of Israel. So I went to my temple, which I had been a member for years, and I went to a meeting to propose to have a pro-Israel rally at the temple. And I made my pitch, and the president of the temple said to me, he said, "Will somebody have an opportunity to speak in opposition?" And I was dumbfounded by this remark. I said, my response to him was, "Well, I mean, at a football rally, you don't bring the other team's captain to talk. This is a pro-Israel rally. Don't you get it?" But in this politically correct world that this guy lives in, you know, it was just so shocking to me. But anyways, this is.
And he was Jewish too, wasn't he?
Of course, he's the president of the temple.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway, so I had to get people to the rally. Now the temple, a large temple in Newton, I couldn't get much traction. So I called the political minister of Israel who's here, the ambassador, and I said, you know, I got to get some people to rally. He says, well, you better call the Christians. So I called this church out in I'm not sure where it was. I call up and I bust them in. So I had so that was my first introduction to Christians' support for Israel. They came in, and so the rally in the temple consisted mostly of Christians who were bussed in. All right, the Jews who lived next door didn't show up. So I became very enchanted with this idea of the Christian support because I didn't care who was at my side. I just wanted to know there were people who felt as I did. So I went to Washington, and I met with Roberta Combs, the head of the Christian Coalition. And I brought my son and the rest of my family, and they happened to be having a celebration for Israel that year. And to be amongst 25,000 evangelicals with their hands in the air and seeing my son up front singing HaTikvah, the national anthem, was a very moving experience for me. And that gave me tremendous insight into, you know, who my friends were and where they were. So my career as an activist in my Jewish hometown has been to really stick it in the face of Jews. I mean, my cause celeb is not necessarily against anti-Semitism per se. There's a lot of that. But in my own community, what irks me the most is when I have to confront Jews or I see Jews who don't know who the right side is. I mean, I'll give a story. There's a Chabad. Chabad is a Jewish sect, and their purpose for existence is really to help Jews reconnect with their Jewish faith so that you have Chabad outposts all over the world. It could be in Thailand where a lot of Israeli soldiers will go for R&R after their service, and there'll be a tent on a mountain, and there'll be a Chabad rabbi there, and you go in there and you pray together, and that's what they do. So they were going to move to a building that had burned down in Newton, and the because they open a temple in Newton, because this is an Orthodox group for the most part, and they don't drive, so they need a place near a population because the population couldn't be served by the one that was so far away. Well, the aldermen, mostly Jewish in Newton, voted against it. They said, no, we can't have it. We cannot have it here because it's going to create too much traffic. But they don't drive. Oh, but... You know, they're going to expand the campus. They're going to go once they get their foothold in this little house. They might want to set up another building across the street. They're going to ruin the neighborhood. I mean, it was just pure anti-Semitism on the part of Jews. They just didn't want to have people walking around looking Jewish. So they had it. This is the
that
most telling thing.
Is,
the most telling thing. You're going to love this story. You're going
to
love it.
That's really pretty hysterical. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll have to say this. I went to Anger Grammar School.
Yep.
When I did, Rosh Hashanah came, or Yom Kippur, there would be four people in the class, and I'd be one of them. I was a teenager before I realized the Gentiles were the majority, because in Newton, Everybody
right.
is Jewish.
Everybody's Jewish.
Even in high school. Even in high school, we.
It's a very Jewish community, and for the most part, it's very misguided. I mean, they have this mentality that they don't want to be identified as Jew. They don't want to be pro-Israel for the most part, because Israel. I mean, I had this conversation with this guy. Usually, when I have this kind of conversation, there's never a second conversation because I want nothing to do with them. This guy says to me, "You know, the settlers." I had this conversation about 6 years ago. The settlers are bad in Israel. I said, why is that? I mean, they're just living in land that they were told to build in. I mean, the government gave them the land to build in. It's Israel. Israel settled the land, 10,000 years ago. Yeah, but with all the problems they're causing, it's making me uncomfortable. He lived in Sudbury, Massachusetts. How this twerp of a guy could feel, threatened because the news was, talking about Jews, those Jews settlers, made him uncomfortable, was the most weak-kneed, pathetic kind of behavior. When my wife and I went to Israel recently, we had an experience that was profound. We were guests of the IDF, and we were taken to Hebron, which is if you ever want to feel besieged, you have maybe 500 Jews living amongst a million Arabs, surrounded. All right, but this is the home of of Rachel's tomb and all this historical, and this is a very important site for Jewish history. So we're up in the hill. In what's IDF has a unit called the Nahal unit, and we're getting a briefing by the general up there, and there's an encampment about Hebron, and then they say to us, well, we're going to take you to Hebron. So they give us the armed guard, the whole thing, and we go down to Hebron. We have like two armored jeeps, and we go to a museum that's dedicated to the slaughter of Jews, because the Jews were slaughtered in 19, whatever it was, because the Mufti sent the word out that the Jews were going to take the Arab land in Hebron. And so the Arabs started raping and killing the Jews in town. And it ended up with 130 Jews being killed. So we're sitting in a museum, a very small museum, and the walls have pictures of the bodies of the dead people, slaughtered in this terrible, terrible moment. And we're hearing the soldiers, of course, are all Israeli soldiers, and you have somebody who is from South Africa who's Jewish, and he's got a gun that looks like a bazooka. And then you've got another fellow who's Jewish, of course, and he's from Brazil, and he's Jewish, and he's there, and he's got a gun that's even bigger. So we've got eight soldiers, the two Jewish kids with the shorts on, the Bermuda shorts, in this thing, and we're hearing the story about how the pharmacist in the town looks out his door as they're pounding on his door, and he says, "Oh, look, it's Mohammed. I just saved his daughter with the medication." "Don't let him in," his wife said. No, he's my friend." She let him in. They slaughtered everybody. So the idea. This is what was really telling to me, and I only tell this story because you're not safe as a Jew or as an Israeli, or really not safe, maybe in any situation, unless you have an army. And the only thing that's saving Jews right now, and these stupid Jews in Newton don't get it, is Israel. Because if they had to get out of here, then God knows what the future holds for Jews in this country, because we know it ain't good in Europe. Because right now they're fleeing Europe as fast as they can get out, because Jews are really endangered in most of Europe. So Israel is the bastion not only for Jews but for humanity. And I think that Christians get it in terms of the biblical study that defines the reason why Jews don't understand Israel, and the Christians do, because Jews don't understand the difference between good and evil. They don't read the Bible. They don't read the Bible. You with me?
Listen, this is
absolutely.
Just... absolutely. And let me just say something. The people that are listening to this, and they will listen on the archived, are all over America, and these are people who are strong and who get it.
I absolutely, without the evangelical community, without Christians who love Israel, Israel would not exist, in my view. I mean, it would exist, but I don't know in what state. I mean, it is the bedrock. It's because you know, I'll give you one more story. I met Elie Wiesel. I was at a fundraiser, and after the fundraiser, he's there waiting for a cab. And I said to Elie Wiesel, I said, you know who Elie is, this very famous author who survived the Holocaust. Very well known.
We all know
books.
Who he is.
We all know. So this is right after Israel. And I think your Christian listeners will appreciate what he had to say. And I said to Elie Wiesel, you know, it's amazing how this is right after Israel had taken out the nuclear reactor in Osirek in Iraq. And I said, you know, Elie Wiesel, it's just amazing how Israel does these fantastic things. It's like right out of the Bible. And he looks me in the eyes and he says, Richard, we are living in biblical times. And the message to me is clear, that these Christians who care about Israel are doing what God wants them to do, what God has been praying. That's what prayer is all about. Jews who are acting in this terrible way are so against the word, are so against what is right. It is a sin. It's a terrible sin. And so supporting Israel is something that comes is a very deep and meaningful expression of love for humanity and love for the Lord. I mean, it is a blessed act. And Jews completely miss it. And the reason why Jews miss it, not all Jews, is because Jews are no longer the people of the book. They are people of the lifestyle. And I was at an event for the IDF, and it was a magnificent house in Newton. You wouldn't believe this house, Jack. Oh, my God. When I walk into this house, the owner of the house, it's like 7,000 square feet. And the owner of the house is on the floor, and he's polishing it was a snowy night, and he has this entryway where the tile is the most beautiful, imported tile, but if it gets wet, you break your neck because the people bring the snow. So anyways, he's this poor guy, you know, this wealthy guy, the Jewish guy, he's cleaning the floor because he's afraid he's a lawyer, someone's going to break their neck. So then I go into his house. He's got a kitchen that's bigger than my house. He's got a kitchen that's got to be 2,000 square feet. It's an amazing kitchen. So then we have the guy speak from the IDF, and he's talking about how they need money, they need this, they need that, and we need your help. So afterwards, I said to the general, the pilot, I said, you know, how are you doing with the Jewish community? Well, I think we're doing pretty well. I think they're very supportive. I said, well, I don't think it's going to work out too well for you. I said, why is that? You know, the Jews really care about Israel. I said, how can they care about Israel when you got to support a house like this? You mean, this is lifestyle, baby. You know, you can't have two gods. You can't be a god. You can't worship your house and all your material possessions and care about the true God or Israel. You can't do it. It doesn't work. You don't have enough time in the day. And I think that's the truth. Living large is not the way to go in this world. And I think a lot of Jews have misguided because they fought so hard to get recognition. They got the wrong recognition. The only recognition Jews really need, in my view, is their faith in God, their understanding of the Bible, and their support of Israel, and embracing those around them, most Christians, who feel the same, and they'd be fine. They'd be fine.
What we do is we talk to people about the values that have made America exceptional, which are based upon the Judeo-Christian work ethic that has stood the test of time for several thousand years. And our forefathers came over and they created a nation where people could thrive. And they could be diverse, but our goal was to make a nation that fostered democracy and fostered equality and fostered the values that come from our Judeo-Christian heritage.
Absolutely.
And we talk about this all the time. Now, we've got about 5 minutes left, and a couple things. One, when things about Israel come up, when there's things in the news, I'm going to call you because I want to have you I want to have you on regularly, at least once a month. To where
that'd be great
fun.
I mean, I try to keep up to date with what's going on, obviously.
I know you do because I get the emails from you and the whole thing, and I get it. All right. Number two, right now, give us we've got 5 minutes, and that's it. Give us a little idea of what is happening and where you see things right now, just a snapshot, and we'll take another snapshot in March. Go ahead, Rich.
Well, Netanyahu, I think, is a very strong president at this time. He's got a lot of problems with, you know, establishing a coalition. But he understands that Israel is against the wall and is not backing up because it's over. I think, it's great. They had the United Nations Commission had a meeting, and Israel didn't show up. And this commission, the Human Rights Commission, has issued in its time of existence, if 1,000 proclamations, 500 of them against Israel. And Israel didn't show up. Why? Because they didn't want to have to submit to this kind of idiocy. And right now the world is experiencing a rampage of hatred against Israel. And
yeah.
And it's happening, and I don't know if you just heard it in Greece. They had a demonstration, tens of thousands of people in Athens marching, fascists marching, giving the Hail Hitler salute. In England is no longer hospitable. There's a lot of anti-Semitism in England. In France, the population explosion amongst the Muslim population. Right now, 17% of all French under the age of 17 are Muslim. And of course, that's a political force, and therefore they have to not the under 17 year old, but I'm saying the Muslim population. So they have to say things against Israel, and they have to believe that Israel is bad in order to appease the Muslims. So things could not be much worse for Israel at this time, both in terms of what's the politics, world politics, and in particular with Obama, Hegel running the show here as much as they can. Fortunately, you have Christians in the Congress. The Jews have sold out. Schumer sold out to Hegel, you know, because I sent you the email. He's what you call a court Jew. So
yeah.
I think the only thing that Israel has really is, aside from God's will, is the nuclear deterrence. And as long as they have the ability to blow up half of the Arab world as a final swan song, that'll keep the Arabs at bay. But short of that, you're going to see more attacks on Israel, both in the press, on campuses, and it's time for those people who feel strongly about Israel to speak up as loud as they can, because you want to be counted at the end, and now's the time to do it. I don't think things could get much worse without there being a full-scale war. That's my
Well,
idea.
That's
I think
how
think
I see it, too, to be honest with you. This is a very, very difficult situation. We have literally 1 minute left, so I'm going to say go ahead, say whatever else that you want to say. We're going to talk next month, if it waits that long, about Iran and the nukes, because that's something that just is so terrifying.
Well,
to me.
The waiting period is over there, and the American government. See, Obama is the worst, is our not worst nightmare, because you have a guy who's popular, who's dangerous, and that just speaks to what's happened to our culture. The American culture has been so diminished because the power of this country, you know, you talk about the core. The core of this country is diminishing. The core was Midwest Christians
We're
to
out
send
of time.
Their kids.
I'm going to have to cut you off and just say, God bless you and God bless
you,
the United
Jack.
States of America.
And
God
Rich,
bless
your brother.
We'll talk again.
Okay, great. Bye.